Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
15%, as you have been hearing all morning. That is the agreement between the EU and the US on trade tariffs. But what does all of this mean? What do all of the other details mean? I'm joined to hash this out by John Isle, Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times, at the Coalface, Tom Keogh, Managing Director of Keogh's Crisps, and Peter Brown, Managing Director of Bagot Investment Partners. Good morning to all three of you. Can I start with you, John Isle, please? The way that Peter Brown was framing it there this morning was, could have been a trade war, could have been 30%, but also there are those who are saying, well, it could have been a lot better. From where you're sitting, how are you looking at it?
I think it's overwhelmingly a negative outcome. I think the proper comparison is not to some hypothetical that might have happened in the future, but to what the status quo was before all of this tariff stuff started. And if you'll cast your mind back to April 1st, there were no tariffs. There was no general tariff on EU goods going into the United States. And now we've agreed to a 15% tariff in one direction. The other direction is a 0% tariff and an agreement to buy all kinds of goods from the United States. So overwhelmingly, I think, in political terms, Trump has come out for the better. The American consumer will be worse off, of course, having to pay more for European goods, and European exporters can look forward either to reduced profit margins on products going to the United States or lower sales due to the higher cost of the goods that will be sold in that market.
In non-political, non-economic terms, have we been successfully bullied?
Absolutely. I think what we've done is given the bully our lunch money. I was saying to someone this morning, it's like yesterday Donald Trump said he'd break our arm, and now we're happy that he's just breaking our fingers. I'm kind of mystified, although I understand to a certain extent why political leaders are trying to put the best face on this. The certainty that everybody is talking about today, I think, is an illusion. We've seen that there is no certainty with this U.S. administration, that trade deals agreed with the likes of Vietnam and Japan have unraveled in rhetorical terms pretty quickly. There's very little that we see on paper about the agreements that are made, and then the details are really movable after the fact. You know, it's an asymmetrical agreement, as many others have pointed out. The European Union, from where I sit, gave away quite a lot of power and leverage at a very early stage, rather than seeing what would happen if the United States had to take the sort of pain of a trade war. Instead, we capitulated in advance in the hope that 15% would be all we'd be hit with and that it would hold forever. I'm not convinced that it'll stay like that, and I think Trump now has the measure of Brussels, and I'm quite worried about what will come next.
Because, of course, Europe never manages to speak with one voice. Who are the victors here? I note that in particular, car tariffs for European-made cars have come down. This is obviously something that's going to be good news in Berlin and to a lesser extent in Paris.
Yeah, you're right to point out that silver lining, and it sort of shows the incoherence of the Trump administration's approach to tariffs. So now European cars will only be charged 15% going in, while the tariff on steel and aluminum is either 25 or 50% for American car manufacturers who are sourcing that those raw materials from abroad. So it does make sense then to probably import European cars rather than, say, manufacture a Volkswagen in Tennessee. So that can be chalked up as a win to the EU. But when you say there, Philip, that the European Union doesn't speak with one voice, I see that Viktor Orban was out pretty quickly today to say that Ursula von der Leyen got boxed around and was a featherweight in the ring with Donald Trump. What makes me worried about that is, you know, you can see splits developing in the European Union where certain countries, Hungary is one of them, maybe Slovakia and Italy, will start to think that negotiating directly with Trump might get them a better outcome than negotiating from within the European Union. So I think we've stored up a lot of problems for the future here. And I just wonder where it's going to go next.
Well, not so long as trade remains the sole prerogative of the European Commission. But as you say, who knows where this goes next? Because the economy that Donald Trump appears most interested in is the attention economy. And he's just scored a resounding victory in that realm with this deal. Why would he not be inclined to come back and have another go?
Well, absolutely. And I think if we put it in terms of the American political context at the moment, he's on the ropes over this Epstein stuff that, you know, has captivated the news cycle over the last couple of weeks. And he comes out of this again, looking like a winner, looking like the negotiator he has always said he is. And again, all eyes are on him. And something sort of strange that you and I in the media, we sort of have to live in this world where Trump creates a reality that is not based on facts, but that we all have to live in nonetheless. So we wind up negotiating a trade agreement based on a kind of fantastical understanding of what a trade deficit even is and how to calculate a tariff on the basis of the balance of trade between two economic blocks. But because of the United States having such great market power, such great military power and great political influence across the world, we just have to accept those as the terms of the game. But again, all eyes are on him, and it's hard not to see him taking advantage in the future of what I think clearly has to be chalked up as a victory.
Stay with us, John Isle, if you will, please. I want to bring in somebody doing business with the United States, Tom Kyo, Managing Director of Kyo's Crisps. Cars might not be the only small bit of good news in this deal. It could be cars and crisps, Tom.
Hopefully, Philip. Yeah, good morning. Great to be talking to you this morning. I suppose just start off and give a few stats. There's about 15% of our total value is exported to the US market. And before April 1st, we had a tariff on our goods of about 6.7%. When the holding tariff was put in of 10%, that was actually in addition to the 6.7. So that's brought us to a 16.7% tariff, which we've been dealing with up until now. So the announcement of the 15%, what I'm hearing is that it's a net growth, a net figure. So that, in fact, looks like almost a 2% reduction in the tariffs that we're paying today.
So it's a replacement of one for the other. It's not a cumulative figure as the last one was. You're not going to be up at 22%. You're going to be down at 15%.
That's what I'm hearing, but awaiting confirmation. But still, we are 8% higher than we were before the 1st of April. So what we have been doing is we have been negotiating with customers. We have been negotiating with logistics. We've been negotiating with warehousing. And we have been doing everything we can to try and find that 8% across the supply chain, so we wouldn't have to put in price increases on the shelves in the States.
For a product like yours, which is entirely discretionary, what do you think would have happened had you just passed on that tariff to consumers straight away?
Well, we can see that some retailers actually did pass it on. And as far as we can see, it has not affected the sale of our product whatsoever. Now, I'm saying that in the background that food prices are very expensive in America. And our main competitive set actually does come from the European market. So we're all kind of in the same boat.
I wonder, though, in the case of discretionary spending items, is the real pinch likely to come 6-12 months down the line when people finally say, no, I'm sorry, I can't afford this any longer, but that their spending patterns would continue pretty much as is for the moment?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's early days here yet. I think as a country, we have a fantastic trading reputation with the States. We have amazing cultural ties. And I think now we get back to work and we get down and get our product selling over there and continue the successes we've had to date.
Tom, thank you very much. John Isle, relatively, well, hopefully good news for Tom Kyo. What are you hearing from other business people that you're talking to this morning?
Well, something I raised in a piece yesterday in the Sunday Times was that the exchange rate is another factor here that is maybe a little underappreciated. So while we've got the 15% tariff going on goods that are heading to the States, the dollar has also weakened by about 15-16%. This year, which really, unless you're hedged against the dollar moving in that direction, will eat directly into any margins that you have on your products being sold into the States. And really, the likelihood is that the dollar will continue to weaken because of the fiscal policies of the Trump administration, which will just make it harder for European exporters to get their goods into the market, either at a price Americans are willing to pay or that will produce the required profit for the exporters. Now, obviously, certain products will be affected more than others. Certain products are subject to more price sensitivity in their consumers. But none of that is great news. You kind of don't want a strengthening euro if you're an exporter, necessarily. There's a certain amount of that you can absorb. But on top of the tariffs, I think it makes trading much more difficult.
Okay. Stay on the line. I'm also joined by Managing Director at Bagot Investment Partners, Peter Brown. Peter, how have the markets reacted to this deal?
Well, the markets have reacted well. I mean, and the reason the markets have reacted well is because we go back to the 2nd of April, and the real thing that scared the markets is that we'd get excessive tariffs, 25% plus tariffs. So the markets, you know, has been running on the basis that, look, Trump backs down and he doesn't kind of enforce those levels of tariffs and there'll be a deal to be done in the end. And they see that as a deal. Now, I take John's points here, right? And, you know, this is a framework for a deal. Right? There's an awful lot of detail to be finalized. And, you know, you can't trust Trump. He might come back and change his mind. But we're dealing with somebody here who's been, believes they've been, the United States has been taken advantage of for decades, right? And the reality is he's a difficult individual to deal with. And some deal had to be done. And this probably really is at the better end of the scale in terms of 15%. And it's really important to note that exporters don't pay the tariff. Importers pay the tariff. So there's three people involved in divvying up this 15% cost. The importer can pay the 15% cost in total, or the importer can go back and say, look, I'm going to put 10% of this on the consumer, and the exporter, I'm looking for you to kind of cut your prices by 5%. So that negotiation will go on between every manufacturer, exporter in Europe with their clients in the United States. So it's very unlikely that any exporter is going to pay 15 or have to reduce costs by 15%. And in terms of who's the winner here, General Motors have just announced that tariffs have cost them $1 billion this quarter. $1 billion. So here's a US importer absorbing $1 billion worth of tariffs. So the concept that this is going to hit the bottom line in the United States and not hit the consumer as a tax and not hit the importer as a tax is not the case. So if we run this on for 6 months and maybe to the first quarter of 2026, this could completely backfire on Trump, that it's really importers and the consumer in the United States that are paying these costs.
Okay, so Peter, you're really talking yourself around from that initial position of a positive reaction from the markets, because the markets will most of the time react positively to any deal, just so long as it is a deal. But you think in the longer term, money is going to be retreating to safer places, into gold and into people's deposit accounts?
Well, in terms of the market, right? You know, the market loves certainty, right? And this deal is perceived as, look, there's a little bit of certainty here. We're not going to get worse than 15%. So the market's always going to take that well. What's actually happening in the market, and going back to John's point, the dollar has fallen 15% this year. We had a situation where there was a massive overexposure in U.S. Markets, basically mainly due to Magnificent Seven stocks and tech. There's a massive overexposure by foreign investors in America. That's unwinding, and that's what's causing the 15% fall in the dollar, along with the fiscal policies that are being pursued there. And yes, it is likely the dollar is going to probably fall another 15%, which is a serious headwind to exporters. But, you know, the mean level for the dollar against the euro is about 130, 135. So exporters have had the huge benefit of a weak dollar, of a strong dollar, for the last number of years, and that'll balance itself out. The US economy is in a lot of trouble, and that's a different issue down the road. But in terms of today and in terms of tariffs, I think the market's going to breathe a sigh of relief that it's 15%.
A sigh of relief being breathed by the markets, John Isle, is that mainly, do you think, perhaps because the markets have a very short attention span?
I think it's because markets prefer certainty to uncertainty, you know, and that's fair enough. A lot of the worst case scenario was probably priced in, and so you're seeing a bit of relief buying now that the worst case didn't materialize. That's fine, but you know, as a forward pricing mechanism, markets don't look all the way into the future. You know, we're talking 6 to 12 months at best. The real concern is the kind of unraveling of a longstanding multi-decade friendly trading relationship between the two wealthiest economic zones in the world. And that has become a lot more tense and a lot less favorable in a very short period of time. And I think that's storing up trouble for the future. And the reason I'm being so pessimistic about this is not because I sort of am reveling in a bad outcome, but more because I'm sensing a lot of let's look on the bright side commentary that's come out in the first 24 hours after this announcement. And I just think we're going to start to see the problems. And Peter's pointed some of them out. Problems in the U.S. economy, which naturally will spread throughout the rest of the world. So once the United States starts to sputter, it's going to become a lot harder for the rest of the world to keep their heads above water.
John, last question, very speculative one, I will admit, but looking at how easy the capitulation from the European Union was, do you think that the Chinese might be looking at us, or any other trade partners might be looking at us and saying, go, let's have a crack at this ourselves?
Well, the first person I thought of wasn't the Chinese, but Vladimir Putin, who must be looking across at the lack of resolve in the European Union at the moment and wondering whether he should roll the dice again. I do think, you know, the Chinese have behaved I think they have recognized their own power in the global economy, and they got into a staring contest with Trump and decided that they were going to match him tit for tat on tariffs. And I think in the end, they probably got a better outcome and maybe a measure of either fear or respect from the U.S. administration. And I really wonder what the reckoning is going to be in the White House now that they've walked away from the European Union with a pretty easy win without having to sacrifice anything. So as for the Chinese, it's who knows? I'm far from an expert in China, okay, but I would say everybody is sizing up what advantages they can seek in this current dog-eat-dog global economy.
John Isle, Peter Brown and Tom Kyo, thank you all very much. Coming up, why air turbulence is making our flights bumpier.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.